The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, what I'd like to talk a little bit about this afternoon is one of the paramis, one of the 10 perfections. The 10 perfections, or the paramis, are 10 virtues, 10 qualities of character, which are said to support Buddhist practice, support meditation practice. And sometimes in places like Thailand and Burma, if someone reaches an obstacle, difficulty with their meditation practice, it's not uncommon for the teachers to say that the person doesn't have the paramis, doesn't have the developed qualities to support meditation, and they should go develop those perfections. And so they're considered somewhat important. And the the one that I'm thinking about today is that of determination. And the determination, the word of that's translated as determination could also be translated as resolve. The Pali word is adhitana, and the Sanskrit is adhishtana. And it's I like to think of it as number of things, but one of them is it's that which is the bridge between having an intention and acting on it. Because you can have a lot of intentions, a lot of wishes to do something. I think I should meditate every day. That's my intention. But it never happens. And so there has to be something that carries beyond the intention, and a sense of adhitana, or just resolve, determination, dedication, commitment that gets us into action is an important part. I think of it as a quality of inner strength, and part of practice is, in fact, to develop certain strengths, sense of strength of discipline, strength of dedication, strength of a certain kind of action. Yes, I can do this. And it's a strength that then becomes a support for us as we live our lives in many ways. The word resolve, the idea of resolve or determination is closely connected to the idea of perseverance. You stick to it, stay with it. There might be obstacles, but you stay involved and keep going ahead. And it has a lot of benefits to stick to it and work and develop whatever you're doing sometimes. And some of the benefits are not the explicit benefits, maybe while you're doing something. There might be other benefits that come from staying with it. Maybe it builds patience, it builds the capacity to persevere, it develops a lot of self-understanding, what comes up as we keep at something that's difficult, and we get to see what happens, our responses and reactions to that. Maybe it cultivates courage, maybe it cultivates all kinds of things. And some of you know, like I said, the analogy that's in the book, The Issue at Hand, of two people who are going to row across a river, and one person rows across when conditions are really optimal for rowing. It's the wind is blowing, pushing one across, the current goes across, the water is placid, and there's no, everything just seems to be just, every time the person puts the oar into the water, the boat just sails across the surface like just with ease. Very quickly the person gets across, and one possibility is once the person's gotten across to their side, the person congratulates himself or herself, what a great rower I am, I'm the best, and fill the conceit, and I'm so good. And then someone else goes out across the same river to cross the other side, but now there's a huge storm, and the wind is howling against the person, the currents go against the person, the waves go against the person, and they can manage to get kind of out into the river halfway, but once they get halfway, it's really raging, the wind, and they just get blown back. No matter how much they try, they can't make any headway. And so finally, they have to go back to where they came from. And so conventionally, they failed. And they might even think, boy, I'm a lousy rower, because of how quickly people have their conceit operating. and they failed. They haven't gotten across where they wanted to go. But there's other benefits. The person who struggled and rode hard and didn't make it, that person became stronger in the process of rowing. And the person who had an easy time, no strength. It was just like, you know, probably didn't have to row at all. The current, the wind would have pushed them. And so sometimes it's that way in practice, that sometimes when things are difficult, that's a time when we build the most strength. And even if conventionally you even think your practice is not working, there's a way in which sometimes persevering and keeping at it develops all kinds of good qualities, all kinds of self-understanding. And you might have to learn to let go of a lot of things if you don't succeed. Let go of expectation, demand, let go of selfishness, self-image, ideas about yourself. You might need to help a lot of patience. And all that builds. It might support you in other times, in other ways. So this is all to say that, talk about determination, resolve. I like the word resolve a lot because I think the word has a number of meanings. As a verb, it means kind of determination, to be committed to something, to decide, this is what I'm doing. Be firm on one's intent. But as a noun, it means to solve. And not only does it mean to solve, but the word comes from the Latin word meaning solution. You can have a solution that's a answer to a problem, but you can also have a solution which is a liquid that you have. And so the literal meaning of resolve in Latin apparently means just to untie or to loosen or dissolve. And sometimes we resolve things not by answering the issue directly. So, for example, maybe you could say, I had this issue today I had to solve. How was I going to come down here and teach with my foot the way it is? Is that really going to work? Can I meditate? Can I sit this way and all day long and... You know, just came out of surgery, so, you know, who knows, I'll probably crash or something. And how am I going to make this work? Should I have extra coffee? I'll bring some coffee with me and that'll make it work. Or, you know, I have this problem, right? And I could have resolved the problem really easy if I just stayed home. The problem resolved. So the problem is resolved not by answering it according to the terms of the question, but by taking away the question. And sometimes in practice, we're looking for some answer, we're looking for some solution for something, but sometimes things get resolved, they get dissolved in a different way than we expect, different understanding of what's happening than our usual kind of mode. And not a few people have practiced, maybe some of you today, and have some problem that seems really big and really grip you, and the problem doesn't get solved by the end of the day. But your relationship to the problem changes. And now you're more at ease with having it. And it's okay, it's not a big deal. I think I can manage, or, you know, I'll go to sleep tonight. I don't have to be in the grip of it. So it's in a certain way, it's a certain kind of way that the issue has been resolved for now, but it hasn't been solved. Because resolved by the fact that you're no longer in its grip and need to have an answer right now. So I love the word resolve because all its rich meanings in English. And part of resolve, having a determination, is to have the wisdom to know what's a good resolve to have, what's a good intention to have. And in the paramis, these 10 lists of 10 different things, it's kind of understood that each of them builds on the preceding one, or the preceding ones. And a resolve is the seventh one. So it isn't just like throw it out there and you can be pretty stupid in your resolve. But you know, it's kind of builds on the others. And one of the ones that it builds on is wisdom. So to be discerning and be wise and thoughtful of what you're doing and understand a little bit more the consequences and of what's happening. And it's also built on the factor of energy or effort or persistence. The ability to apply yourself is the earlier perfection. Resolve means that you stick to it. And sometimes you need to stick to something for a long time. And with meditation practice, I think it's very helpful to have a sense of resolve, because sometimes meditation brings instant results, and it's very nice, but sometimes the results only come over doing it over and over and over again in a long time. So much so, sometimes it's imperceptible day by day what changes and what develops and what growth we've had. But we keep going and keep doing. There's a slow refinement, a slow deeper understanding of what's going on, a slow movement forward that over time makes a huge difference. I think of someone who's a swimmer, and someone can know how to crawl across the swimming pool back and forth. But if you do it day after day, the swimming, then in ways maybe not, that are not even so conscious, imperceptibly the person is learning to make slight shifts and changes in how their hand goes through the water, or how they lift their shoulders and their arm. And, you know, it becomes, and the more they do it, the more they start seeing little differentiations, differences they start seeing that build up over time that they couldn't have known if they just did, you know, went swimming once. But it's the repetition over and over again. So the same thing with meditation, repetition, that if you do it every day, you start knowing something about your breathing and what happens to your breath and what happens to your mind and how to relate to it and how to apply effort, how to apply attention. And there's all these little variations of how attention is applied or not applied. Or maybe you learn that you don't have to make hardly any effort at all sometimes, and it's mostly a matter of learning how a subtle way of getting out of the way and just allowing something to come through you. But, you know, it's very different to learn something like that slowly, slowly, and finding your way because you're kind of refining it and taking the information in, your system takes it in, and then you learn and you adjust. It's much better and I think more enduring to learn that way than it is to read a book or listen to a Dharma talk. And, you know, get some idea, but it's not, you know, it stays in the idea of in the realm of an idea, as opposed to this kind of, you know, you can read a book on swimming, right? Oh, you're supposed to move your shoulder that way. And yes, you're supposed to move your shoulder that way, your wrist that way. But whoever wrote that book didn't know your wrist, didn't know your shoulder. And it could be that there's a little difference because of how your bones are. And so you have to find your way. So the same thing with meditation. You know, whoever wrote the book on meditation didn't have your mind. So how does it work for you? And what goes on here? And so part of the determination is to stay with it, have a resolve. This is what I'm doing, and you do it for a long time. Then you get slowly begin to acquire a lot of self-understanding, a lot of familiarity with the territory and the terrain, that it becomes easier and easier to negotiate your way. One of the things that has been a pleasure for me to watch, both when I was a practitioner but also as a teacher, is to watch how people's bodies change as they practice. And some people develop these kind of a little more yogic bodies. They feel, you can tell, you know, when someone first starts meditating, you know, like they're sitting like, you know, and they're, you know, all tense and, you know, trying to figure out how to sit, and they squirm and they're looking at their watch and, you know, ring the bell, their mind is yelling. And then at some point you see that they can sit with comfort, and they just sit and you feel certain, like their whole body settles and their chest relax, their shoulders relax, and you feel their body is there in a full way. And they develop kind of a yogic body. And that also, you know, it's kind of like a yoga practice. You have to do it and do it and do it. And something settles. All these little shifts make and add up over time. So a regular meditation practice allows for these kinds of subtle, small shifts that build and create and move as you go along in time. So part of the wisdom part of having resolve is to resolve on the right things. And some of us are resolved on our anxiety. you know, like I'm loyal to my anxiety, you know, and no one's going to take it away from me, and determination, my fear, my worry, my desire, I like my neurosis. I'm going to therapy to overcome it, but I'm not going to let go of it because I know I'm supposed to do therapy, but hey, I'm not, you know, I like, you know, not, I'm not going to give that up. And so, you know, we can be resolved on things. We can really be determined. And we might not even know how much we're determined because some of the strong things that motivate us sometimes occur off, you know, off stage, you know, in our subconscious almost, that we don't even know why we're always doing the same thing, running into the same problems. But it certainly is there's some kind of determination there, like, this is what I'm going to do. But it's good to have some wisdom about what is a wise thing to be determined on and what is not. And the Buddha gave four resolves that aren't the end of the story of what to be resolved on, but they're a very interesting list of things to keep in mind. And I've been told in places like Thailand, these are considered very kind of, they're often referred to, and people think about them often, and they're kind of in people's kind of consciousness as something to be resolved on. So the first is to be resolved on wisdom. So wisdom means not just a bunch of knowledge that you have how things work, but the ability to be discerning, the ability to actually look and take the time and see clearly what's going on here, and have a good sense of what is helpful and what is not helpful in the situation. So to be able to look at the situation through the viewpoint of what is helpful and what's not helpful, as opposed to the framework of what's in it for me, you know, or some selfish kind of concern about the situation, but what's helpful and not helpful. And so to be resolved on seeing more clearly, to be discerning, but to ask the question, what is this? What's going on right now? What's helpful in this situation for everyone concerned? As opposed to what's helpful for me, what's helpful for them, but to kind of open. I think that's part of the definition of wisdom. The second is to be determined on truth. And there is no Buddhist practice without a commitment to truth, to being truthful. Not being truthful goes in the opposite direction of waking up, being free. So the interest, passion or delight or joy or for truth. What is true? What's really going on here? And just the fact, the drive, the desire to discover what's true is probably the most important thing. Sometimes it's a little dangerous to discover what's true if you then hold on to it. Like, you know, and almost you can kill the truth by holding on to it too much. Hopefully you'll discover the truth, but don't hang on to it. Then keep seeking. Go to the next thing, the next moment. Every day you wake up, there's something new. Every moment, something new. So don't hold on to the past truth, but rather, you know, look at what's next, what's true now. And part of the idea of commitment to truth is to be a true person. And I'm actually very fond of this, the expression in English, to be true. To be someone who's true. It means to, you know, not just to be honest, but to kind of, so to say true. For me, that expression means that how you live your life, how you manifest yourself, how you present yourself is honest, is true, is aligned to what really is. So it'd be a commitment to the truth, to being true. For some people, this takes a lot of courage, and it's maybe why it fits into this category of resolves. Because it's hard to be committed to the truth. It's hard to be committed to being true. It makes some people feel very afraid. They feel vulnerable. They feel they're going to be taken advantage of. They feel that if they're that transparent and being true to the world, that they'll be judged in some negative way. But to learn how to be wise and be true, that's how the path opens up. The third resolve is a single word in Pali, but it's a word that can be translated into two ways, and I like both ways. One way is translated as generosity. So be resolved, be committed to generosity. And it doesn't mean that you have to give away everything you own the first chance you have, but maybe it means that you offer your attention to people. Maybe when you see people in the store, in the clerk in the supermarket, your generosity means you don't give them, you know, one of your donuts you bought, but it means that you say, how are you? Or you smile at them, or you just spend a little bit more time to try to see if you can make a human connection to them. And I don't know, maybe you're not like me in my unusual way of being a human being, but I'm capable of going on the checkout counter and only be interested in what's going on in my things that I bought and what price I make sure I got the right price, and never look up. So I have to remind myself, you know, there's a person there, and so to be generous with my presence, my attention. And so the generosity is a beautiful quality, partly because, and this is what the other meaning of this word, chaga, is it also means renunciation or relinquishment. And the two go hand in hand, in the sense that if you have a gift and you give it to someone, you have to hold it, and then you have to release it from your hand in order to give the gift. So the generosity does involve some kind of giving away of something. And so this idea of relinquishment of those things that we hold on to, and there's something about generosity that's very closely associated with freedom, with not holding on to anything at all. And so to explore and discover this this world of generosity as a determination, be resolved on this, be generous, don't hold on, is a great support for practice. The next one is, the last one is be resolved on peace. And peace is, one way I understand peace is to be resolved on non-conflict. So it doesn't mean that other people are not conflicted with you. It doesn't mean that you don't have disagreements with people. But the word conflict, I guess it's maybe a Latin, it kind of is a violent word. It means like to strike against, strike with. And is that right? Someone, you know, something. And to be in conflict means you're kind of in a fight with someone. And it's possible to have a disagreement and not necessarily be in an active conflict or fight with a person, like a pose. Like you, it's possible to approach someone and say, wow, we seem to see this situation in a different way. We seem to have a different understanding. I wonder if we could talk about it. And then you're not in conflict. Then you're kind of being partners. Let's explore it. As opposed to, you know, you said, I said, and, you know, and then we're in conflict. So to be resolved on not being in conflict. When I first went to Thailand to practice, I was staying at a little monastery, and I met a meditation monk who'd been probably a monk for many, many years. He really impressed me. And he had the kind of eyes that I haven't seen very often. You look into his eyes and you look like you're looking into deep, deep, profound space. Like, wow. I could just look into his eyes. He's like so deep somehow, literally deep somehow. And he was a deep meditator. I never heard anybody describe the meditation experiences he had until that time. It was all new for me. And he inspired me. So I asked him one point, all your years of practice being a monk, what have you learned? What benefit have you had from it? And he said, non-contention. He learned non-contention. And I guess it's maybe his way of saying learning not to be in conflict. So I think it's a beautiful thing, this idea of peace, being resolved on peace. And again, it has to be supported by wisdom. You don't want to just kind of be peaceful and harmonious at the expense of denying what's going on or denying yourself or just pretending there's nothing going on. That's difficult and challenging. But even I think peace is even more valuable when there is interpersonal challenges, when there is the difficulties between people. To be resolved on peace then means that you stay in the situation, but you try to find a way that is not in conflict, in a way that maybe is mutually supportive for everyone involved, as opposed to me versus you, which is often a part of what goes on in conflict. So these four resolves, wisdom, truth, generosity, and peace. And then there's your resolve, your intention. I think that one of the things I've learned from my years of practice is what a very important source, is to be found in your deepest intention, your effort to really look deeply in yourself and discover what is it that you want, what's the intention you have for your life. And because it's so important, your life, you're important. I think to value yourself, to value this life, to value this opportunity to be alive, to consider yourself as someone who is important, that counts. And then if you count, if you're important, what is the intention? What is the support? What do you want your practice to be about, your life to be about? And I think of this as so important that I think that's actually, of course I like people to meditate every day. I think it's great, right? But I think it's actually more important for people to every day spend time reflecting on what their deepest intention is, because that really makes it personal. It's really what's here. And out of that comes, out of your deepest intention, comes your life and follow from that. And I have a lot of faith and confidence in people's deepest intention. Or say it more accurately, I have a lot of confidence in the search for and trying to discover what your deepest intention is. I spent a year of my life with every day thinking about how would I live my day if I knew this was my last day, if I was going to die that evening. And it was great because it kind of brought me to kind of ask this question, what do I really want to do today? What's most important for me now? What's my motivation, or what do I really feel like is important here? And to be reminded of that day after day was kind of a wake-up for me, and it really got me kind of, engaged in this life in a fuller way and motivated in a nice way. But it was also nice because over time, my intention shifted over the year. And to watch it shift or to watch it change or kind of to find one intention and then kind of stay with it and keep asking the question, don't just settle if that. Not I saw that one. I'm going to do more important things now, but just keep asking the intention and keep asking the question: what is the intention? What's the intention? And then dropping underneath the surface of some and discovering deeper ones and deeper ones. One of the interesting ways of exploring intention is to see what comes up as an answer for you, and if it's a negative answer, restate it positively. So, for example, if the answer is to live without fear, that's a negative response to the absence of something. It's a great thing to live without fear. It's an intention that should be honored, and definitely. But to state it positively, or say it this way: if you had no fear, then what would be your intention? And sometimes if you say it negative intention and you restate it, it throws a different light on your life and yourself, okay? A different understanding. So someone who says, I want to live without fear, but say, state it positively, or if you had no fear, what would your wish then? Then they might say, oh, to live with love. And to hear it be said that way, to live with love, compassion or whatever, and to know that that's part of the deepest intention, it might actually be more useful to focus on that than to focus on being without fear. Sometimes, not always, sometimes fear can be shed like a snake shedding its old skin. So if you realize that love is a primary intention, then to let that grow, make sure that has space and time, water that, and then some things will just kind of fall away. And that's part of the what's also very useful with intention, with resolve or determination. If you have a strength of resolve that's stronger than your neurosis, stronger than your fear or your hate or your greed or whatever it might be, just keep going. Then it's sometimes you can grow beyond that or kind of break the shell of that. It just kind of falls away. And it doesn't have to be solved. You don't have to figure out what to do with your fear or your resentments or your hurt that you carry with you. But something grows and grows and grows within you, and some inner strength, some inner sense of fullness, or some inner sense of contentment, peace, well-being, something. And the other things just kind of dissolve or shed or fall away or break open or something. And sometimes, occasionally, it's actually more effective that way than just, you know, dealing with the fear directly or whatever it might be. So the idea of resolve, determination. Last thing I'll say is that this theme, this quality of resolve or determination, many people will think of it or associate it with getting a tight, bearing down, kind of like, oh, now I got to get tough, now I got to get serious. You know, Gil's talking about determination and like, I'm going to tense up and really, you know, like, you know, put on my armor and really, you know, make effort here. And, you know, that's not what I'm talking about. One of the nice things is you can be very resolved, completely committed, dedicated, give yourself completely over, make a lot of strong effort at staying relaxed. Isn't that nice? So, you know, so you can't just tense up to get more relaxed, right? That doesn't work. But you can really put a lot of effort into it, a lot of attention. Really try to stay that way, open, relaxed. And it's a well worth effort to try to stay relaxed and soft in a certain way. So this idea of determination doesn't have to make you hard in a very good way. Hopefully this kind of language was okay for you. It can make you soft. If you've been around a really good yogi, someone who's done a lot of yoga, some of them, if you look at their muscles, it doesn't look like they've been to the gym. You know, they don't have all the, you know, that, you know, they can't bulges and all that, but they can be very, very strong. But those muscles are really soft, and so they kind of have a lot of soft and ease, but they're really strong. Soft doesn't mean you're not strong. And maybe the strongest people are the softest. So to be resolved, to be determined, and to be supported by that, to have a sense of what your intention is, what you want, what's important, to engage, even if you don't always know, but to keep engaging, and staying in it, staying in the fire, staying with it, the slow training over and over again, like swimming, over and over again, just do it and do it and do it, as opposed to giving up and just like watching TV. You know, in 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you probably won't remember your TV shows you watched or the news that you read. But maybe it won't support you, but stay with it, slow, step by step, being determined, practice, and let it slowly grow, slowly grow. Let it slowly, the powerful snake that you are, grow so that you shed all the old skin. Okay, so that's what's on my mind. And I want to thank you all for coming to this day long. And I keep saying this when I do that because it's true. I'm very fond of these day longs. And I think it's a very important part of what IMC offers is these silent day longs from 8:30 to 5 where there isn't some teacher interrupting your practice with all kinds of words and guided meditations and you're just kind of left with yourself, and it's really when you're left with yourself and really finding your way and your path through yourself and really not being distracted from yourself that I think some of the deeper work happens, and to know that so many people will come to do this for a day is very satisfying and inspiring, and I thank you all for doing it. So it's the custom here at IMC is that